Log Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Network that discusses solutions for the Black community presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptop, if you have something to say or a question, you may dial 516-531-9540, 516-531-9540, and press 1. The lineup. On Tuesday, we have Black Urban America. I'm your host, and my name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne. And on Thursdays, we have the part of Harlem Magazine show by Wayne A. Young. And on Saturday, we end up with Provocative Thought with Carlton Sneed. And we are all over the nation. Michonne's Chicago. Wayne is D.C. Carlton is in Philly. And I'm in the ATL. Now, let me ask you something. Do you remember the Jetsons? Some of y'all might be young and don't remember the Jetsons. But look, if you look at that cartoon, very sci-fi, and everything that cartoon we're doing today. How about sci-fi movies 20 years ago and it comes true? Now, how about Black sci-fi that predicts the Black future? Well, tonight, we have someone that's going to discuss that. And it's a term called Afrofuturism. I hope I said it right. And this person, this special guest, is the president at Democratic Women's Club of San Diego. She's a community activist, and she has a doctorate in educational leadership. And I'd like to welcome Dr. LaWanda Richmond. Welcome to Black Urban America. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm fine. I'm fine. Dr. Richmond, I'd like for you to meet Michonne Williams from Chicago that have her own show on Wednesday, and she co-hosts my show on Tuesday evening. Ms. Williams, Dr. Richmond.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. It's nice to meet you.
I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. I know you're a busy woman, and thank you for taking time now to honor us with you, with your presence, and teach us and enlighten us about this topic we are going to discuss this evening, which might not be evening as of yet in San Diego. The sun is still up.
We can't. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Now, what is Afrofuturism?
Ooh, that's a big question. It really depends on who you ask. The term was originated in the early 90s by a British journalist named Mark Derry. He was writing a collection of essays on cyberculture, flame wars. And so there are a bunch of people who contributed, and he decided that his chapter would be about Black to the future. And he coined the term, and he said when he coined it, for lack of a better term, we would call it Afrofuturism. And it refers to like speculative fiction, art, science fiction, music, things that center the Black experience in the future or in an alternate way as opposed to us either being absent or marginalized. So I would say Afrofuturism from that definition is the opposite of Pleasantville. Then there are some people look at Afrofuturism as a framework for visualizing a better future or even visualizing where we're going on the trajectory to identify what we want in the future and then how we can do personally and individually and collectively to make that future more likely to manifest.
Now, I'm going to ask you some questions later on about that, a better future. Is there a difference between Afrofuturism and science fiction? Is there a difference?
So that's a good question. I think that there's some intersection because some Afrofuturist work is also science fiction. Not all science fiction is Afrofuturist, and not all Afrofuturism is science fiction. To give you an example, when we talk about science fiction, some science fiction either doesn't mention Black people, or if they do, it's in a very subservient way. I would say I think it's Farnham's Hold or something like that. There's, of course, the work of H.P. Lovecraft, which, countered by Lovecraft Country, which is all about our experience. And then when you talk about Afrofuturism, some of the work is not so much science fiction as it is fantasy or speculative fiction.
Mm. Now, how can Afrofuturism help Black life, Black family, and Black communities?
So, I'll tell you, I do a lot of talks, and quite often I'll have someone in the audience say to me, Black people can't dream or imagine the future because, that's a luxury. We have to focus on the here and now and how to solve the problems that are in our face. And I don't disagree with that being outside of the level of immediate priority. But the reality is, as long as you don't have your own plan and your own agenda, it's very easy for you to be co-opted into meeting the needs and serving the agenda of someone else. It can help us in the sense that if we can imagine and come up with the ideas of what we want and have clarity on that, then we can look at aligning our actions, our behaviors, and our choices to help move us in the direction of the things that we want to see happen.
Mm. Okay. Michonne, you have a question?
Yes. Is Afrofuturism connected to ancient African traditions?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of that question could be answered a lot of ways because personally, when you think about the history of humanity, most things are connected to ancient African traditions. But beyond that, one place we can look to see some connection would be the culture and practices of the Dogon people. And basically, if we go back millennia, several millennia BC, we will find the Dogon people created origin stories that involved aliens coming from outer space to teach them lessons and to help them predict the future. And wherever they learned what they learned and however they learned what they learned, they were able to accurately predict the orbit of the Sirius twin star system before modern scientists had the technology to actually identify its existence.
Where are the Dogon people from? What part of the motherland?
That's a good question. I used to know that off the top of my head because, you know, I fill my head with so many facts. But I'm trying to remember. It's West Africa. I couldn't remember if it was West or Central Africa. Yes. So south of the Niger Bend. And there's cultural tourism that happens, you know, where people go, and there are some people that get excited about the mask. I'll say another interesting thing about the Dogon people is that one of the things that's really powerful in their culture is Nomo, which is the word. And, you know, quite often, you know, we don't choose our words in a way that acknowledges the power of the spoken word in terms of creating and manifesting our destiny.
What do you think Black life will be in the future? Take us 50 to 100 years from now. I ain't going to see it.
I mean,
I
won't see it either. But, you know, I think a lot of that depends on the choices we make and when we make them. I mean, one of the things I think that presents an obstacle to us really manifesting in the fullness of not only our potential and our capability, but, you know, where we were before is a lack of agency and commitment. There, of course, are people that are opposed to us rising, but the reality is there will come a point in time when we can no longer deny who we really are, and then we'll be able to take care of business in a very meaningful and effective way. We are, you know, all this discordance and strife, a lot of it is because we're not in align with our spirits and with our natural selves.
Right. How come we lack commitment? Why do you think we lack commitment to really do for self for the future?
So, you know, let's think about the song Lift Every Voice and Sing. And there's a line in there where it talks about where hope unborn has died. So, I mean, if you look at our history in this country, and, you know, this is after the Civil War, every time we built and we're moving in a direction, I mean, how many Rosewoods and Tulsas happen that we don't even know about? How often?
Oh, there was a town in Houston where it was a black session and white folks. Matter of fact, I had a big shootout, and I learned that from watching this movie called The 24th, where black soldiers had to protect.
Yeah, you think about, and black soldiers came back from the war and couldn't even get VA loans.
They still can't. And the way black veterans are treated, and I'm talking about from Vietnam to today, the way black veterans are treated is a shame. That's how come the black vets for the Vietnam War always stated that the military is not for the black man. But, you know, the difference between black men and white men go sign up for the military. White men do it for the spirit of patriotism. Black men do it like it's a job. You know, I got to feed my family. So they sacrifice that. How can black society become more innovative?
Well, we already are. I think one of the challenges is that we don't necessarily acknowledge or have an awareness of the innovation that continues to happen. And then we also, we often create things and innovate them and start them, and then someone else actually sticks with them and profits from them. One of the things that happens is we create, you know, particularly in like the arts, but also in science. I mean, a lot of the things that we do them simply as out of a desire to be creative and solve problems. And, you know, quite often other people get that credit, or no credit is given or acknowledgement. And so, you know, we don't know that, you know, we already have people that are inventors and engineers and researchers who are finding cures and ways to, you know, minimize the effects of different chronic diseases. And then let's look at even the pharmaceutical industry. They tend to go to places where people are still in alignment with nature and observe mm-hmm. them, and then take what they're doing naturally and then bring it back and make it into a business or an industry. So I think part of it is we have to place more value on what we have and what we contribute, and we have to get a better understanding of our worth.
Yeah, this is what I understand when it comes to innovation, that every appliance, everything in a household, a black man or a black individual has something to do with it. If you look at the space program, it was sisters down with that. If you look at mm-hmm. architecture, if you look at civilization, black men, mm-hmm. the black culture, the African culture,
agriculture,
it influenced all culture all over the world. You know, but Michonne, you got a question?
I do. Why is exploring possibilities good for the psyche?
Well, you know, when we don't explore possibilities, we leave ourselves thinking that the way things are is the way they're always going to be. Unless you're like in like the perfect situation, that's not a good place to be. Another reality, and this is just like a principle of physics, there really is no being still. Things either go up or down or move. Things get better or they get worse. So if you're not actively engaged in exploring possibilities and being aware of your environment and how to make things better, you will find yourself in a situation where things have become much worse than you realize they could be.
Press 1 if you have a comment or a question for Dr. Richmond or something to add.
I have another question.
Go ahead.
Is the movie Black Panther Afrofuturism?
So the movie Black Panther did for Afrofuturism what the movie Hidden Figures did for black women in science. It raised an awareness. So I would say yes with an asterisk.
Why asterisk? You're not going to say that and get away with it, Dr. Richmond. You have to go deep. You know, we got deep black folks that download this show and listen to this show. So,
well, I mean, you know, I guess the easy answer is just yes, but there were just some things in the film that were problematic and didn't resonate, and perhaps, you know, and I've been on panels with other people who could say this more eloquently, and some of these things I can admit I didn't notice at first until, you know, they pointed them out and I thought about it. But like, there are a few things. One, in the 21st century, with an awareness of things like COINTELPRO and an awareness mm-hmm. of how different African leaders were assassinated when they were doing things for their people.
Lumumba, yeah.
Yeah.
Gaddafi.
I can't, right. I cannot imagine a civilization that was as advanced as Wakanda allowing that CIA agent all up in their business like that.
Yeah, and to add on, we talk about infiltration. It's not like
yeah.
we could start organizations and we could have growth in organizations, but as soon as they display results, here come the infiltration.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we're infiltrated by us.
Yeah. I mean, the other part is even like, you know, the storyline with Killmonger and his dad and, you know, how that whole thing went down.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot. There were a lot of problems with that, too.
How can we, when I say we, us, I'm talking about black folks. You know, our programs deal with black folks, you know, solutions, black folks. How can mm-hmm. we critically engage? Yeah, I'm about to take this in another next series of questions. I'm about to go somewhere else with it. How can we critically engage with science and technology?
Oh, it depends on what field. I mean, part of the, right now, particularly right now, we've got access to all types of programs and information on the internet. So there's that. Most of our kids are doing distance learning or have engaged in distance learning. And you don't have to be a child to learn. I mean, I believe in continuous learning throughout your life. Most of the museums in the world are currently offering online programming so that you can actually see their content without having to travel to their doorstep. Then, of course, there are organizations like NSBE, the National Society of Black Engineers, sorry. And then there are, there are different, like,
yeah, they're out of Pennsylvania, right? The National Society of Engineers, they're out of Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, but they're everywhere. And,
okay.
And they're active and they're strong. In addition to that, Kwame Ture, rest in peace, used to say, if we really want to do something, we have to get involved with organizations, because no matter what you try to do as an individual, if you find organizations that are moving in the direction you want to move in, you can move together and have a much greater impact. To that same effect, there are people who are looking for people who want to learn.
Right. But Dr. Richmond, it's difficult, to find an organization to be a part of that is totally for the black assistance and is about the black experience. We got organization now on multiculture, diversity. I cannot name that one, or they have a lot of Europeans on their boards. Or
science is science,
far.
Though.
Huh?
Science is science. I mean, where you learn it and what you do with it are two different things. And so if the only place you can go to learn about physics and math and science and the natural sciences, if that's the only resource that's available, unless it's shut off, learn what they have to offer.
I know I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about organizations that are supposed to be here for black folks. And they wind up, they start out, with positive intentions and positive goals and objectives. But in the end, we find out they have other reasons for having the organizations. And that's what I mean by it's difficult to find an organization that is really it's really for the betterment of black folks in America.
Well, you know, I can say, you know, what I've done, and, you know, not that I encourage everybody to do what I did, is I look at specifically what I'm going to do and figure out who to collaborate with. I don't expect any one organization to be everything that I would want, and that keeps me from being disappointed. Because we do have to see things
a brother to a Ray. And he, you know, we all know that he was the author, the chairman of Black Power, you know, whether it be economic power, political power, community power. It was all about Black Power, which I like to get called B1, keeping Black first. How does this philosophy push up black empowerment? How'd they integrate?
How does what push up black empowerment?
Afrofuturism push up black empowerment.
Oh. I mean, a big part of it is, you know, and again, it depends on how you approach it, but it's really, you know, they say if you can't see it, you can't be it. Afrofuturism gives us the space to imagine the reality that we want to see come into being. And the thing is, once you have a clear vision and a clear direction, the next step is to reverse engineer what are the steps you need to take in order to make that happen. Who are the people you need to connect with? What type of skills do you need to bring in the table or bring in the force for that to manifest? And I think sometimes we look at all the problems of the world and we see how big they are and we feel like it's hopeless, but we have to learn how to look at the problems we can solve. And if we continue to do that, we'll look up and we will have done quite a bit.
Isn't that similar also to creative visualization?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, you know, if you're talking about futurism, you know, a big part of that is the imagination. And creative visualization is basically imagining and using that in the direction of achieving what you want. But I will say I'm not advocating only imagining. I'm advocating imagining and identifying the work to be done. Because there are a lot of people who are content to wish.
But don't follow up on the wish.
Yeah, I mean, because a dream without a plan is just a wish.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, okay. Now, how can we?
Afrofuturism being recognized as a powerful creative force right now?
Why is it not?
Yeah, now.
I think that it depends on who you ask. Last year, Afrofuturism was on the cover of
Dr. Richmond, are you there?
Hello?
Tide lifts all boats. When we thrive, everybody thrives because, you know, one of the things that people miss or forget is that black empowerment is not at the cost of expense of or denigration of other people. Empowered black people want everybody to do well. And so it's an entirely different system. So part of the problem or challenge is when you start talking about wanting everybody to do well, people who are currently at an advantage realize they will not have the same distinct advantages. And so they only see that betterment of society where you don't have hungry people as them not being able to have as much on their table.
So how can this philosophy of imagining and wishing and then following up on the imagination of black folks are creative people, how can you involve more scholars like yourself, politicians, business people, educators, to to adopt this type of thinking process?
So, you know, I want to tell you, I'm actually a dwarf when you talk about the scholars that are exploring this line of thinking. I like to think I'm relatively informed and relatively active, but there are people that I learn from. And many of the people who are at the forefront of Afrofuturism are not out there waving their arms saying, hey, look at me, look what I did. They're busy being about their business and doing their work. Because sometimes when you tell people all of your plans, all you're doing is creating an opportunity for them to figure out how to be an impediment.
Well, that's what Dr. Clark says, too. You don't have to be marching around, always pulling our fists up in our air, pumping our chest out. You know, we could be in the basement. We could be in the back rooms, planning, organizing, and implementation. Yeah, I agree. We like to tell our business too much.
Yeah. Well, they say everybody's business is nobody's business.
That's right. How do you think other cultures became powerful, like the Japanese?
Yeah.
How come? Okay. Now, when I look at Afrofuturism, crossing technology and whatnot, and I think about our schools like in Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, Philly, ATL, you know, schools that's in predominantly black neighborhoods, you know. How come we're not, now you just spoke of engineers. How come we now, how come our curriculum in these school systems, and you look at suburban schools, or you look at schools that are multicultural at the first, you have children, other ethnic groups like Pakistani, India, you know, getting on these science awards or what have you. And how come our school system are not involved with more a STEM curriculum?
So, you know, let me unpack that, because you asked, that was a pretty complex question. So let me start with the last thing you said. Those are not our school systems.
You're about to get ready to say something, aren't you? Go ahead.
All right. So most public schools in the United States, the curriculum is based on what they want it to be. It's set in Texas. Because I think they buy the most textbooks or something like that. And so there's that, all right? The other part is, you know, what do they say? You can't expect to use the master's tools to tear down the master's house. The education, the curriculum that is out there is colonized.
But a lot of these school systems are run by black superintendents and black principals. You just said about 15 minutes ago that we get the knowledge for them. Let's put it in our schools. But they do the opposite.
I'm not against that.
Go ahead.
So I just ran for school board in San Diego last year, and I learned a lot.
That's why I'm asking this question, because
you are
involved in education.
Just because somebody looks like us, skin folk, not all skin folk are kinfolk. And I will tell you, the way the political system is currently set up, it's run by the people who can afford to finance candidates. And ordinarily, unless you get an extraordinarily well-run grassroots candidate with a strong ground game and a lot of support, the candidate who can afford to pay for ads and to pay for staff and to pay for all those things that you need to pay for in a political campaign, that person wins. In my school board race, I was able to raise almost $20,000, which is nothing when you're looking at the second largest school district in California. my opponent had almost $400,000 to work with.
Wow.
And the support of labor. And I had 45% of the vote. So I got close, but my 175,000 votes was not enough to win.
So let me ask you this. I'm gonna stay on that topic. You mentioned grassroots. How can we empower? Because right now, when you speak of grassroots, you talk about local. How can we empower grassroots organizations?
So, you know, it's a tricky. We're getting into some more trickery because, you know, and I hate to say it, but a lot of times it all boils down to money. A lot of these grassroots organizations are funded by, right. So then you you got to think. So let's look, and this is a homework assignment because I'm not going to put anybody on blast, but the state of California, the state conference of NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
The chair of that conference recently retired,
mm-hmm.
and they celebrated her, but there was an initiative on the ballot to fund public education.
Mm-hmm.
She was hired as a consultant by the people who did not want that initiative to pass.
Whoa, and she took it?
She took the money, and she used her position to say that this initiative was bad. There was another state measure on the ballot to reverse the ban on affirmative action programs. And there's a lot of discussion about affirmative action and who it did and did not benefit. But not being able to even consider the impacts of discrimination and systemic racism in decisions around hiring and contracting and admission to public institutions in the state of California does not help. And there was nothing from that organization supporting it. So that's just the thing that makes you go,
Like Arsenio Hall used to say.
Right.
So
all I'm saying is, unfortunately, you got a lot of people who are thinking about their pocket and not thinking about the people that they say they're there to serve.
Which is not us. Go ahead, Michonne. I got to process that. Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay. Is the black science fiction being ignored?
No. Right now, in this moment, I would say not only is it not being ignored, people are looking for it. Now, part of the problem, though, is when it's too effective in terms of its message, it doesn't stay on the air very long.
Okay. And is Afrofuturism being taught in any K through 12 or at any schools that you know of?
You know, it depends on if it's being taught that I'm aware of. I would say it's more like kids get a lecture or they get introduced or, you know, like one of the things I'm pushing for is during Black History Month that we think about Black futures and include Afrofuturism. And that's why I do Afrofuturism events every Black History Month.
So why stop at the 1 month? How come you can't go throughout the year?
I don't stop. I never stop. I do them all the time. But when I do something during Black History Month, it's futurist. Because as much as I respect history and understand we need to know our past in order to understand our future, I believe that we need to put as much energy into thinking about what's next as we put into looking back on what happened before.
Now, you said earlier that black empowerment does not mean that we want other cultures to fail. We're just focusing on our betterment, okay? And how will Afrofuturists, how do Afrofuturists feel about the philosophy of separation?
I think it's a path. I think that that, you know, when we had integration, when integration became part of our community, we started having fewer black businesses. When Brown versus the Board of Education was being discussed, black teachers were not happy because they didn't think non-black teachers would care as much about the well-being and future of black children.
And they were right. And they were right. Go ahead, Dr. Richmond. I'm sorry.
I can't say they were wrong.
I said they were right. I'm going to come out and say it. They were right. If you look at it today, we just discussed why the public school system don't have STEM research. We just discussed
you have to go further than that. Why is it that our black boys are disproportionately suspended, and then the most disproportionality exists in the grades K-3. And K-3 is extraordinarily important because that's when you're learning your building blocks of reading and math. So if I can make you feel stupid and kick you out of the classroom before you get to learning well, I can prevent you from being successful in life.
And to add on that, Dr. Richmond, to add on that, not only are they mostly suspended, they are also the most to be put in special, the high risk put in special education classes.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And I don't think that's an accident.
No, it's not an accident. So how do Afrofuturists feel about reparation? Because a lot of people come on, the guests on the show, they sure talk about reparations, and they really feel that they're going to get reparation, and I slow their roll. Go ahead, Dr. Richmond.
So
enlighten us.
So I don't know if you've read Randall Robinson. But the debt that is owed to us is so enormous that reparations would only be a token, like an honorarium. So there is some value though in there being, you know, some form of reparations or some effort made, because it's just like, you know, we are in an abusive relationship with the people that have oppressed us. And if they want to make it right, you know, it's going to take some effort. It's not, and they keep looking to us to solve the problem. It's like the man who beats his woman and then asks her to fix the relationship.
And what do that a woman eventually do that is being abused in the relationship? She separates from the abuser.
Yeah, she got good sense. She gives ghosts. And so that's why I say I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying that, you know, I never disagree with separation. What I'm saying is the people that aren't trying to separate, I'm not trying to make them. It's kind of like, you know, it goes back to not all skin folk being kin folk. And then the other part is we have to remember that we have separated. And in many cases, when we have, that is when they've rained down destruction on our people and on our families.
That's the truth. History shows you that. Okay.
Yes.
And I just want to say, this about reparation, and then I'm gonna give it back to Michonne. And Michonne know what I'm about to say, because I say this all the time when this issue is brought up. You cannot expect our government to give black folks reparation. And people say, well, why? All you got to do is look at American history. All you got to look at the history. And we just said that we are in an abusive relationship with our oppressors. And you expect our oppressors?
Yeah.
Like Malcolm said, how can you go to a system and ask this system for freedom when they just enslaved you? That don't make no sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, but the other part of that, though, is, you know, when it comes to our freedom, part of that is we have got to break the mental chains of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I encourage
Afrofuturism.
Yeah, we've got to go beyond the limits that have been placed upon us. And if you ask me about education, I mean, the best, you know, I have a friend who was homeschooled K through 12. Like, he never went to elementary school, went to a public school until he went to college. And, you know, not only did he do well in college, he got a PhD from Northwestern. But because he was not colonized while he was a child, he was able to see it coming when he was an adult.
Mm. Great, Michonne. You have another question?
I actually have a couple questions.
Go ahead.
Is Erykah Badu a Afrofuturistic music artist?
I would say yes. I would say beyond that, she is just incredibly creative. And, you know, and I would also say that, you know, all the indication I have, she is an example of a free human being, which is very rare in this society.
Okay, and what are the contributions of Octavia E. Butler?
So some people call Octavia Butler the mother of Afrofuturism. She definitely was, in terms of science fiction, probably the most well-known and prolific African-American writer. She was the first writer, science fiction writer, to get a MacArthur Genius Grant. She was the recipient of the science fiction's highest award in a time when science fiction was absolutely dominated by white men. I would say when it was, because in recent years, and there's been a lot of pushback about this, science fiction has been dominated. When you come to recognition, it's been dominated by black women.
Okay.
That's interesting.
Anyway, it's such a problem that they actually have people trying to put in fake votes and fake ballots in order to flip it back to white men.
I'm not surprised at that.
That's exactly what I was
because they thought it was their
realm.
I like to ask a political question. And this is my last question of the evening. I like to ask a political question. Do you think we should have our own party?
I think a few things. I think we should make sure that we are having babies and raising them to be healthy in mind, body, and spirit. As in terms of our own party, I think there's a few approaches to that. I'll give you an example. When you look at the Republican Party, what it is not what it was. And I would say the big shift for that party in recent years came when the Tea Party was formed.
Right.
And they slowly shifted its agenda from within.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we forget is before the Civil War, the parties were polar opposites of what they are now. And the party for the people and the party that was pro-abolitionist was the Republican Party.
True.
And so we could take our time to form our own party, but realistically, I think there are much more effective strategies that we could take if we want to influence policy and practice.
Like, what are some of those strategies?
Check out the Working Families Party that's run by Maurice Mitchell.
The Working Family Party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other part so is, that, you know.
So why are they so special?
So, you know, I'll let them tell you. But the other thing is, you know, people like to focus on who's president and what's happening in D.C., but most politics is local.
Right.
This country was designed with a strong attachment to states' rights.
Mm-hmm. Still are.
And within states, there are a lot of things that are even, you know, at the really up to the city or county or school district. So, like, in San Diego, the school district is not run by the city or the county. It's independent and reports directly to the state.
Mm. Okay.
And so part of what we can do, rather than try to form our own party right now, I think our first step would to become more civically aware, to have a better understanding of the things that we don't like or that we want to change. Where is the lever to change them? Is it at the local level? Is it at the county level? Is it some planning committee that none of us bother to show up to meetings on? There are a lot of decisions being made every day that impact all of us. And as long as we're not in the room, one, we don't know what's going on until it happens. Two, we aren't in a position to speak up and influence what's going to happen or how it's going to happen.
Rishon, you have anything more to ask Dr. Richmond?
I disagree. I do think we need to form our own party. And I also think that because especially Democrats who take advantage of our votes and think that they automatically can have our vote and get our vote and give us empty promises, that we should have our own party and make them work for our party and give us something tangible instead of all this lip service. So if we should have our own party, and if they won't do what we need them to do, then we won't give them their vote. Let them go out there and try to do it on their own.
So can I ask you, so is there an opportunity for me to speak to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm not opposed to us having our own party. What I'm advocating is that before we start trying to form a party, that we gain an understanding of the way the system works. And in terms of Democrats or Republicans and who to vote for, I think that when we only vote based on party lines and not on being aware of who is or is not going to support our interests, we're never going to win. The only reason I'm not advocating and saying let's go form a third party is that, you know, I understand the math.
I understand that.
And, you know, there are.
But I don't believe in giving my vote away for free.
So I'm not saying to give a vote away for free. Really, if we show up, we will have. I mean, part of what we do is
giving it away for free. You giving it away.
So, but how accountable are people to us if the only time we engage is in the ballot box?
They're not being accountable right now. They haven't been accountable.
So
Here's
my question. So, we just had an election. We just had an election in November. All these people who were saying, let's get out the vote, let's vote. How many of those people still engaged, paying attention, And asking the right questions and holding people accountable to do what they said they were going to do. Historically, most people, not just people that look like us, most people, they vote based on a soundbite or an ad that they received, or somebody told them that they should vote for somebody, or they like the person, or they think the person's cute. Right. And then after the election is over, for the most part, we're not following up and saying, hey, I voted for you. You said you were going to do this. Are you going to do this? Make sure you do it, because if you don't, we won't vote for you again.
Okay.
A lot of people think civic engagement is voting. It's not. Voting is important, and I don't want people to stop voting, but voting is just scratching the surface, and we will never have any kind of power or influence in a meaningful way if that's all we do. If that's all we do, then what will be our puppets and pawns to be used for someone else's agenda?
We were already being used. We were used as puppets and pawns this election, because black people say
absolutely
Joe Biden.
I'm not
they
disagreeing
Joe
with
Biden,
you.
South Carolina did, brought on back. And what did he do when the first thing he got in office? Talking about what he was going to do for the LGBTQ and what he was going to do for immigrants. When it was black people who put him back where he needed to be to win in the position. He wasn't even.
Well, he's getting ready to meet with Cube with the contract of Black America, where Dr. Claude Addison helped him develop that contract, and Dr. Boyce Watkins helped him. There was a lot of prominent black scholars, economic scholars that. Cube is just the front man. It was a lot of black economists that helped this dude develop the contract to America, which is basically reducing the wealth gap. Now, I don't know that Biden, because he's a tricky dude, he's been in politics for about 50 years. I don't know, he's just meeting with Cube just to shut us up because we really looking at him, or he's really meeting with the contract and looking at all what it entails. Well, Dr. Richmond, that's all we have for this evening. I would like to thank you for the stimulus conversation, and I'd like to welcome you back, and I'm going to be in contact with you because you have a lot of information. And thank you for enlightening us on this topic, because really, I never heard the topic. I heard of the philosophy, but I never heard of the labor until I met you. And I'd like to thank you for coming on the show.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. And Michelle, it was really nice to meet you, and I'll check out your show, too.
Please.
Thank you.
Please.
Oh, you know what? Can I also tell you guys, on Sunday I'm hosting an Afrofuturism Dream Tank online, and it's
mm-hmm.
free. And it's really easy to register. You just do bit.ly/dream with the capital D, 2081.
Repeat that, please.
bit.ly/dream2081. And the D in dream is capitalized.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you so much. That's it we have for this week. And remember, you know, we have to continue to dream. But not only dream and be imaginative, but we have to be more creative and innovative. And we have to implement, like Dr. Clark, we have to implement what we said we would like to do. As always, I am because we are. Of course I am. Everyone, have a nice
week.
Hold it now.